Shut up and sit down.
Hello and welcome to episode 82 of Geek Grills, a podcast in which geeky women and sometimes guests gather to record topical conversation and then offer it to the masses. The Geek Grills podcast is supported solely by our patrons, and you can become a patron today at patreon.com/grills. I am the Jen, and I'm here with my co-host, Linda.
Hi.
Hi. Mm-hmm. In September.
Hello.
Also known as 9-12, sorry.
It's okay, whatever.
Also known as whatever her name is today. I call her Ember, but that's me. I don't know. And today we have a guest, which I am super excited about. I heard him on Mind of a Geek, and I was like, poke, 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 hey, hey, hey. And it was somebody I wanted to have on anyway, and it reminded me. We have Mr. J.F. DeBoe, who is a 2-time Dragon Award-nominated writer and author of The Life Engineered and A God in the Shed. And A God in the Shed is a book that I enjoyed very, very, very much, FYI. Hi.
Hi, thank you. I'm intimidated. Still learning to deal with praise. I should talk to my therapist about this. I'm sure he's going to ask about my parents if I do. But yeah, no, thanks. I appreciate it. Thanks for having me on.
That's a sign that you're a writer if you don't handle praise well. I think that's pretty much built into all writers that I know. Every single one.
That's true. I've tried that trick on even Andrew Main, who tends to give a very confident facade until you talk to him one-on-one and you praise him on something, and then he starts stumbling. It's great. It's the best.
I feel like it's because there's always room. Like, no matter, you could finish editing something, and I feel like I could edit something forever. I don't think it ever ends, and it's always, well, I could do this and just maybe a little bit more. Ah, tweak, tweak, tweak.
Oh, oh yes. Well, speaking of Andrew Main, one of his saying is better done than perfect. So that applies
to a lot of things in life, I say. Oh my goodness. All right. So what have you all been up to? Linda?
Do we have time for the plushie update.
Yay, I like plushie updates.
Oh, we all like plushie updates. Here.
He's so fluffy, I'm gonna die!
So, this week's plushie update is hats. I have many, not many. I've got 3 beanies that I've made. I have an R2-D2 beanie.
Aww.
Sweet.
A C-3PO beanie, which is less apparent, but it does have his little, like, thing on it. And
his little dome knob.
His little dome knob. And BB-8.
Oh, my God.
Oh, that is excellent.
Sorry, I'm loud.
Clear, easily the most popular.
Yeah, I don't, like, I was making these, and I wanted to make each of them because I have a pattern for all 3. I don't know how much C-3PO might sell, but I'm pretty sure that R2-D2 and BB-8 will be gone very quickly. So,
well, anybody wearing one of those R2-D2 dresses they have is a sure bet.
Yeah, right? I actually really like the R2-D2, too, so I would wear either, man. Those are awesome.
And then let's see. Also this week, I've been doing a lot of packing. Packing for both the LARP that I'm going to on Friday, and packing, helping my parents pack because they're moving, they're downsizing. My husband and I went over there on Sunday, and we were putting things in boxes and getting up on ladders and such because my parents shouldn't be getting up on ladders. And every time I would see something that I was like, oh, I forgot about this, or oh, I remember that. That's really good. Mom would be like, you want it? I'm like, I don't. I only have a very limited amount of space in my apartment. I can't take everything. but we did end up with a new bookcase. And I've got a new, it's behind me, so you can't really see it, but I've got a new yarn holder. Because it was just this bunch of shelving that she didn't need. So I was like, I'll take that. It's got basket shelving. I can put my yarn balls in it. Great. I'm still in the middle of dealing with all of that. As you can see, all of the yarn behind me. Just kind of out in the open where it's not supposed to be. So that was pretty much my week, was yarn and packing.
Oh my gosh. That sounds like a little. Everything looks awesome. I'm so excited for all of the fun stuff you've been making. I can't get over how adorable those are. I need one. I don't have any reason to wear one. I'm in Arizona. I'm never gonna wear a beanie. So sadly enough, not if I was back in Chicago again, I totally would buy a beanie. But
beanie.
Not unless you decide to go like up to like mountains to go like skiing or something.
Over it. Beanies, for a while. It's gonna be a few years till I care to do such things.
That's a two. Anyway.
Ember, what have you been up to this fabulous geeky week?
Well, let's see. I finished The Life Engineered by our esteemed guest. You guys know I really love the sci-fi, like all up in the Philip K. Dick and everything. And I really, really enjoyed it very much. I'll bring a hat comment in because you use the word beanie for like a little winter hat, and then that makes me nuts. And I was like,
sorry,
psyched. It's okay. I'm from Buffalo originally, as a lot of people know, and so I'm almost Canadian. And in at the end of the book, he referred to a toque, and I was like, yes, like it was this little like, because I live in the South now, and they call them down here. They call them toboggans. And I'm like,
what?
You are not wearing a toboggan on your head. A toboggan is a sled. A really big sled. Yeah, they call them toboggans down here. So
it's weird because my editor for that book is in California, so he did question, are you sure you want to use two? I'm like, yes, yes.
I think I Googled that. Insist. It's been a while, so I don't remember, but I'm pretty sure I Googled it.
Yes. Because
I'm
sorry.
Like, I mean, I can, from context, I understand, but yet still, I would like to know. No, I'm from California, so beanie.
toboggans are the things that have the ear flaps.
Wow.
I thought it was a sled. See, I'm with you guys.
See, here a beanie is the same as a toque, except of a thinner fabric so that you can wear it all seasons, but a toque is specifically for the winter.
Hmm.
Like thick wool and stuff.
Interesting. I called it a beanie because that's what the pattern calls it.
Yep.
That's what we call them
in California, like West Coast. Like we always have called them that, so I don't know. It's weird.
To me, a beanie is like the one with the little propeller on it, right? Like,
oh, like right. A Tweedledee Tweedledum hat?
Yes.
That's a beanie. That's weird.
So anyway, I did that, and now I'm a little more than halfway through God the Shed, which, whole different genre, loving that too. My husband is going to go crazy for that. He reads Lovecraft stuff over and over and over person in our household. And I do have some questions about point of views you used on it, but we can get to that later. What else? I can't believe I forgot to tell you guys. Last week I was talking about the Pokemans, and I had an EX raid pass, my first one. So Saturday I got to go do a Mewtwo raid, and I was going to get somebody else to throw for me because I'm terrible at it, or just really unlucky, probably unlucky, and everybody was too busy to do it. Everybody that was invited was there, and they had one or two devices in their hand. And Peter was like, as long as you had a curveball and a great throw, you got it. Nope. 10 throws, because we had a whole team of Mystics. We all showed up early. I didn't catch the booger. And I was so sad. I mean, I was so excited, though. I enjoyed the process very much. Like, that I was in the Mewtwo raid, and like, he showed up on my screen. I took a picture, and I was skipping around. And people were like, wow, you're a little too happy. but I did go right after and ran around. We ran around town. We did a whole bunch of raids in a row. Like, that was so cool. That doesn't happen all the time. But a whole group of us, to the point where a new person to the area was like, where were you guys when I was leveling? This is amazing. Mm-hmm. And I decided to level my son's account a little bit. It's kind of like the Baby Instinct account, so I can use it more. And I caught a shiny Absol.
Is that a thing now?
Yeah, there are shinies in the game, and there's a few, and I got an Absol at the raid, and it was shiny, and I posted it, and I was really excited, and people were like, oh, that must make you feel better about the Mewtwo. And then there's this guy who's a real piece of work.
Oh, we can't swear on the pod.
We can swear, but he did help me catch my Kyogre, so I'm not going to get too mad and call him names. But he just flies and flies and flies and pays and pays and pays and, like, everything has to be the best. And he was like, well, not to shit on your shiny, but that's the worst IV you can possibly get in a raid for... And I'm like, dude, really? And people are like, shut the fuck up, dude. Leave her alone. She didn't catch Mewtwo. And he kept going, and it created this big... Like, everybody's like... And he had just actually been added back to the chat. He had been removed from the chat because he does this all the time. So anyway, he is the very best, the best there ever was. Hi, Nick.
Oh my god.
So what else? Oh, so then I reached level 35 today in Pokemon, by the way, which is exciting for me. And I got this bottle of wine. Those of you in the stream, if you have not heard of this thing, this is one of the bottles it works with. This is 19 Crimes, and it's very good. This is the dark red, but you can get an app, and it's called, like, Living Wine Labels, and I downloaded this app, and it is the neatest thing. I've been hearing about it. Living Wine Labels is the name of the app you can download on the App Store, and then you just hold it up to your bottle of wine, and it brings the label to life. Like, the dude on the label starts telling his story, and you can see him moving around.
That's really cool.
While he
talks.
I think
I saw a video of that on Facebook. It looked rad.
It is really neat. My phone is like a 6S, so I can't take the living video. But I recommend it. It's really freaking cool. And I will be buying more of the wine. I actually went, when I first got the app, I went to our local wine shop. And I was running around looking, and they didn't have any. So, but I actually bought a bottle at BJ's today. That's my geeky week.
That sounds pretty fun. Sounds like a good week. And how I'm excited for your Pokemon, your additions to your Pokemon collection.
Thank you.
I wish I could have stayed into it. Honestly, Pokemon Go is really fun. I wish I just had people that I did it with. My friend does it still, like, down south. He's in a town south of me. And they, like, have a group, and they, like, run around and go do it. And I think it's really awesome. I just wish I kind of kept up or had a little pack of people to run around with. I think it'd make it more fun. All right. So, our guest, our esteemed guest of honor. I'm just doing it on purpose now. That's that little tweak to, like, I have to troll a little bit. I don't know why. Oh, goodness.
Half an hour, I'm going to have a twitch.
So what have you been up to in your a corner of the geeky universe?
Unfortunately, no Pokemon for me for very much the same reasons you mentioned. All I have around here is my brother who made fun of me when I tried to play it. No, recently it kind of came to my attention that one of the biggest event in my nerdy life is the nerdiest but coolest thing, an event called Adepticon, which is a miniature wargaming convention held in Schaumburg near Chicago. And I've been going there for 8 years, and every year...
I live in Schaumburg, and I attended it 7 years ago.
Well, 7 years ago, it was in Lombard.
It was in Illinois, though.
Yeah, definitely. It's like in the suburbs of Chicago. And it's such an awesome con, and it's a family reunion for me. Like, all my friends go there, and every year I paint new models, like new toy soldiers, because I am very much a nerd. But I'm late on everything because of book stuff, so I had to prioritize between finishing a manuscript, submitting it, and then painting my toy soldier. So now I'm just, like, the last 2 weeks I've just been painting little plastic dudes. That's been consuming my life. It's between that and getting in fights with my editor. That's all I do. I wish I had more exciting things. I mean, I guess it's exciting that about 2 weeks ago I submitted the manuscript for the sequel to God in the Shed. And then 1 week later I got reamed by my publisher because there's stuff in it he doesn't like, so we had to have a discussion about the editing process. So that's good, but it's also very time consuming, the full-time job. And I also have other podcasts, which I'm gonna plug. I do an Overwatch podcast with my friend Amy Frost, so that takes an hour of my week every week because she does all the heavy lifting by doing the editing.
Hi, Cap.
There's always one, right?
Yeah. That's the cat. That's the podcast.
It's the stream cat, yeah.
Stream cat. Sorry, do continue.
No. So, yeah, I wish I had way more exciting things to say, but I don't. It's exciting. Way, are you kidding?
Submitting a sequel to your published already book? That is super exciting.
Yeah, like, oh man, like I'm only doing really awesome stuff.
Oh no, I mean I've been hitting some really weird milestones, like Gone to Shed sold its 10,000 copy a couple of days ago, and it's so bizarre because these are all things like publishing a third book. I know they're all super exciting things, but I get to a point where I'm so busy that they happen and I'm like, wow, this is exciting. I'll celebrate later. And by the time I have time to be excited about it, like the moment's passed for so long, it's like, yeah, I guess it happened and on to new things. And I get to enjoy the successes, which is great. And we can probably again talk to my therapist about it. But I never have time to like just sit down, like open a bottle of wine, just get drunk over it, because there's always like another thing taking my attention, which is good. I mean, it's all good. Like when I do get time to celebrate, it'll be huge, I guess. But for now, it's just exhausting.
You could have just brought wine here. I did.
I wanted to get scotch for the podcast and I forgot. So all I have is Diet Coke, like a moron.
I feel like Diet Coke versus scotch. They're relevant. They're similar. I mean,
they're both bad for me.
That's probably true. You know what's funny is that I just realized how old I am and how I still can't conceptualize that it is 2018, because it was 2007 that I went to Adepticon.
Oh,
2007.
Damn.
And it was because a friend of mine was involved in it, and I was living in Schaumburg at the time, and it was in Schaumburg when I went, because it was at the Marriott, and I remember it. And so I went, and I looked at my pictures, and I was like, what year was that? And then I went, oh, Jen, it's 2018, honey. It's not, like, it's been a few more years than you think. God, it's I don't know how we got to 2018. Like, I'm scared. We're going into the 20s again. Can we all just take a moment to recognize that it's about to be the 20s?
No, let's not. let's absolutely ignore that fact for at least one more year.
I vote that we bring back flapper dresses and fedoras.
If we can bring back the
three-piece suit.
Oh, yeah, totally. If we can bring back some of that, I'm kind of okay with it. The 20s were one of my, oh man, I love that time. As far as like just jewelry and dress and like attire was awesome at that time. We could bring that back. That'd be cool.
Footwear. For men was amazing back then compared to what we've got now.
Absolutely true. It was actually really amazing for women too.
They're learning how to dance the Charleston, so they want comfortable shoes.
Mm. And they had little clips. They would get like one pair of really awesome shoes that they really liked, and they would be black or like one plain color, and they would have these little like rhinestone clips that they would put in the front to like adorn them and make them look a little bit different. My great grandmother had a whole set of them. I actually still have a bunch of her shoe clips, which was just really cool. Why don't we do that anymore? Like, that's really cool.
Yeah.
Anyway, I'm weird. So I've been playing Monster Hunter, big surprise, a little bit. Oddly enough, though, I've been incredibly busy because my friend made it here. He's officially no longer in California. He made it to here, where he is now living. I now have a roommate. I now do not have a giant house to myself anymore, which is nice to have another human here. But it has been a lot of cleaning, organizing, and unloading, and chaos for the last couple days. So that's been pretty much taking up the most of my time. I did watch The Conjuring, which I've been meaning to watch for a long time. That was weird. It was enjoyable, but weird.
The Conjuring... Conjuring is the one where it talks about the Annabelle doll, but they don't go into it.
They don't go into it at all. They mention it. She comes up a couple times, but that's it. And what's super weird about it is that the person that plays the mom was in Mystic Pizza, and so all I can do is see her character in Mystic Pizza, and I can't get away from it because I'm like, oh, Portuguese chick from one of the Portuguese chicks from Mystic Pizza. Like, that's all I can ever think of, and I'm trying to like take it out of your mind, Jen. She's not getting married and working at a pizza parlor. Like, it's just, I don't know. It's
Yeah.
It's hard when they have like a role like that where you remember them from something so strongly and then you're trying to like be like, oh no, you're in this context. Weird. I did enjoy it though. I thought it was pretty well done. There was actually moments that I didn't anticipate. That normally never happens. So that was really exciting.
Go ahead.
No, okay, there was one that like I jumped so much that like the cat like freaked out and ran away.
Yeah, I normally don't like horror films. Or some horror I'm okay with, but that actually was one that I actually kind of enjoyed. I don't trust my friends super much when they tell me they're gonna watch a horror film. Ow, cat, thank you. Thank you. Thank you, kitty. Chew. Just pulled my... Alright. Still okay. Almost lost my headphones there.
She's assaulting you, it's fine.
Yeah. Because these same friends are the ones that are like, let's watch Event Horizon.
That is a fucked up movie. You have fucked up friends, dude. That you have to be mentally and physically, emotionally, spiritually prepared before you watch that film. Because you're like, oh, well, how intriguing. Whoa. Why did it go this way?
I went in cold at the theater when I saw Event Horizon.
Oh, God. Yeah,
no idea what I was getting into. It was great.
Now, one of my friends is super into horror, so there's a reason why I take headphones over to her house now when we go to hang out, because sometimes she's like, let's watch this horror film, and I'm like, I'm going to plug in and just kind of listen to nice music while you guys have fun. But that one was actually okay. They told me, they were like, no, this one has a good ending, so you'll be okay. I was like, all right.
Yeah, super good ending. I didn't want to hang myself afterwards. It was fantastic. Sorry, I didn't mean to reference. Like, I'm sorry. There are very few movies that I watched that, like, took me to such a dark place. That is on the very short list. And one of the other ones is Requiem for a Dream, obviously, and probably Trainspotting. But I also read the book, and somehow the movie hit me in a weird way. But Requiem for a Dream and that movie, and, well, there's a couple others. Very short list, but that movie messed me up pretty good. So I did finish Pilot X, by the way, finally. I've been reading that for a bit, well, listening to it for a bit. I really enjoyed it. I highly recommend it. Check it out. And I plugged it last time. I'm going to plug it again. You can find everything that Tom Merritt does at TomMerrittBooks.com. But yeah, Pilot X was really good. Check it out if you haven't. And with that, I believe it is time for the Geek Grapevine. That's actually me typing on my keyboard right now. Oh, wait. No, it's too quiet.
Not loud enough. Yeah.
All right. I feel like this was an Ember edition, or I'm sorry, a Linda edition. Linda, is this yours?
No. Super duper busy, but I'm going to try and find something while you guys are talking. So,
okay.
Ember.
Go.
Yeah, this is me. My middle son is super into Smash Brothers, so like he literally came bouncing around the house like, dear. It's like, all right, I'm gonna put this in our news. So back on the 8th, Nintendo announced that the Switch version of Super Smash Brothers is coming. It'll be released this year, so we don't have a date. We've had some discussion in the house about this. My son seems to think it won't be till Christmas time. I think if they're mentioning it now, they might try to get it out before. There is a big Smash Con at the beginning of August, I believe. And I wonder if they might try to get out before then to put it immediately into competitive play and take advantage of that hype. That's what I would do, but developing is hard. The big thing that is the trailer is mostly that is they're adding the Splat Kids from Splatoon.
Okay, that game, I feel like I enjoy watching it, but I don't get it. I tried to play it one time and I was like, all right, this is all right, I guess. It's just a weird game. It's really fun to watch, but not as fun to play. It's one of those games that I would prefer to watch somebody else play it than play it myself, which there's not very many of those, but that is one of them for some reason.
I like having all the different characters, and then they've got different skins, and just having cross-genre beat-em-up. I find a lot of fun, but it's not any fun to play with somebody who's really good, because you can button smash and have a good time and get lucky sometimes.
There's a shirt that I want that says it's got a controller on it, says Victory Through Chaos, because when it comes to Smash Brothers, I am a button smasher because I don't know the combos. I learned how to play Smash Brothers with a friend of mine. Like, it's a really long story, but we basically met each other because our parents were trying to set us up so that we wouldn't be dateless for our like senior proms. He's a really sweet guy. We just didn't hit it off, but he like invited me over to his house and we played Smash Brothers on his giant TV and such because he was like loaded.
It's like, this is super adorable. Didn't hit it off?
Loaded. He sounds like my kind of guy.
Loaded and plays video games.
I mean, he's super sweet. He's like super sweet guy. It's just we were like, hey, you want to play video games? Yeah, sure. Let's play video games. and then we ended up going to three proms together because I went to his, mine, and then our band also had a prom because the band kids couldn't go to prom because they were at a competition. So they were always, they threw a band prom for the band kids.
I think it's funny that the two proms I went to, the 2 years I went to prom in high school, because the county I grew up in was so small, we had to literally go to Sacramento an hour and a half away for prom. So that whole limo ride thing, yeah, like you didn't do that. You just got in whoever's car we were going to carpool in, like whoever's parent had the big enough minivan that we could all like split the gas to get to prom. And it was really bad when the first year, my junior year, well, my sophomore / junior year, the guy I went to prom with, he asked me to prom, but I found out he only came with because he wanted to get with my friend. And so we found this out at the event. And so we left him there and we went home. So, and people are like, oh, that's rude. Whatever. He probably got a cab. And I'm like, yeah, he didn't get a cab. No. That was a not nice thing for us to do, but it was a not nice thing that he did. So he was duly punished.
This is a weird tangent, but what the hell?
Anyway,
I went to four proms.
Moving on.
I went to four proms. For my own, I went with like my 22-year-old boyfriend from out of town, but ended up spending most of the prom with my physics teacher, which is
okay.
This is suspect. Another I feel like
long
this
story. And then I've got I went to a prom in North Tonawanda with a friend of mine, and I went to a prom in Niagara Falls with a friend of mine, at which I met in person finally someone who's been on our show to talk about barbecue and cooking,
because
we're still friends. I actually chatted Adam after that because we knew each other through a bulletin board system, and I saw him at this prom I was at with someone else, and I next time I saw him online, I pulled him in a chat and like, you look cute in a tux, and a great romance was born. And then when I was 21, I went to a prom for what was my local high school with a friend of mine.
That's too much prom. My senior year, I went.
And for someone who
I'm not doing that again.
Was the weird goth chick like? I actually was offered money by one of my nerdy friends that I like played D&D with and stuff to not wear that black satin dress, to wear something else to his prom, and I ended up wearing my stepsister's homemade dress. But anyway.
I
did not do prom because I don't think it's as much of a thing. Like, I don't think we probably have an equivalent here, but yeah, no.
You don't have a promenade? Well, a promenade?
I don't even, is that what prom stands for? Here
it's short for promenade. Yeah, that's exactly where it comes from, but it never gets called that anymore. I don't think people know that, actually.
I'm pretty sure they don't.
Know it as prom night.
all we have here is like, we had a graduation ball, and I had no interest in going, so I did it.
We have homecoming, and then at my high school, juniors and seniors could go to prom.
That's how mine was, too.
So,
three out of four of mine, granted, unless you were got just asked going by with a junior my nerdy friends senior. Who didn't have dates. So
then you got to go. So weird. Such a weird concept. Anyway, let's go.
Let's move.
Weird high school.
Yeah,
weird
sorry.
Moving on.
We went from Smash Brothers to prom, but anyway, next.
And now we're gonna go to...
That would be a prom.
To my hand, that's my gauntlet hand. For the audio listeners, we are ready for Infinity War. It is just a little bit over a month away. I am so freaking excited. It is. I've gotten to a point now where like it's just I can't even handle it anymore. I need it here now, especially because people keep putting out so much information about it that I'm like, stop it. Like, obviously some people are starting to see like intro, like beginning cuts of it and whatnot, and are like giving out information. Like, I don't want to read that. Like, I turned off all my Google alerts for it because I don't want to get, like, I want to enjoy it. So I hate when people feel like they want to like spoil crap. It's not nice. Anyway, moving on. Yeah. 76 characters are set to feature in Avengers. So I'm going to link the article in the show notes, but there's, so we have like 40 plus of them that we know for sure by name, but I can't figure out like what, how are these people going to get screen time? I mean, if you just think about it, like the one thing, the reason I linked this article in particular is because it lists out the major ones, like the 30 absolutely major characters that are going to show up. Mm-hmm. 30 characters. Now, in most films that you watch, there are generally 4 or 5 at most. In ensemble films, you might maybe have 10, 12, maybe. If you're looking at like a Guy Ritchie film, for example, you might get up to those types of numbers. But even those films don't get anywhere close to 30. So how in the hell are we going to shove that much Marvel character into one itty bitty, like, I don't understand how it's going to happen. So anyway, I don't know.
Yeah, because they usually cut they cut these movies down to, what, 2.5 hours?
They'll only let them be usually 2 hours at most, I would think.
So if you divide that by, like, 70 characters, that's 2 minutes each of talking?
That's without any establishing shots, fight scenes, or anything like that. Yeah, there's
Marvel
not
never
much
has
room
any
left
of those.
For dialogue.
We don't ever have those in Marvel. Just kidding, they're so good. We have them all the time. I love them. The Wakanda ones are some of the best. Oh, so good. I want to watch it again and again. 3 more times. Oh, my goodness. Okay, so anyway, I'm excited about Infinity War. Here's your weekly Infinity War update. Jen's Marvel nerd.
I found one.
I pulled it up.
It's yay!
Great for 2 reasons. One, this is from this week.
Yes, this is from the 7th, I think.
Yeah, the 7th. Okay, so Okaloosa County, Florida. It wasn't happy hour. Oh, great. Really? Really, writer? Okay. All right. I'm going to read it verbatim.
You sound like Scott right now. Scott Johnson spends half his time in the news.
I'm sorry.
Complaining about the writing.
Because sometimes I'm like, really? All right. So it wasn't happy hour, but beer was flowing on an interstate in Florida. All right. A South Carolina truck driver was carrying 60,000 pounds of Busch beer on Interstate 10 in Okaloosa County, Florida, when the accident happened. Oh, well, he was sustained minor injuries in the crash and was cited for careless driving. And he, oh my gosh. So he traveled outside of his lane, causing the truck to overturn onto its passenger side, spilling his cargo. So yes, 60,000 pounds of beer cans, Busch beer cans, just everywhere.
So the equivalent in alcohol to about a 6-pack of Canadian beer?
Absolutely.
Bird, U.S. beer.
In my house, we refer to Busch, Miller, Bud, all of those as beers that have undergone the Canadian filtering process. And that Canadian already drank them.
Oh. I see what you're saying.
Oh, my gosh. Oh, God. Okay, so that was a good one. That's a good one.
And who measures beer in pounds?
Yeah.
What the hell was that?
That's a lot of beer.
It's a lot.
It's an
incredible beer. I can't remember the actual weight of a buttload, because that's an actual measurement. It's a buttload is a measurement. They used to measure wine.
How does that compare to a metric fuck ton, though? That's what I would like to know.
I don't know. Hold on. I can't remember how much it is.
Google, please convert for me.
I have a converting app on my phone. I don't know if it has fuck ton on it.
Does it have metric fuck ton, though? Make sure it's the...
63 gallons. Hold on. No, a butt is 126 gallons.
So how many mine is in a can of beer?
12.
So that's how many you're my butt.
Sorry, that answer was really fast.
I know, I need to work out more. That's what I'm saying.
Oh my gosh. So with that, our discussion topic today isn't really much of a discussion topic as much as it's a discussion guest.
We have a guest.
Yes. You know what? It's Can't Talk Tuesday.
No, that was Can't last Talk week.
Tuesday. Part two. The re-talking.
We have to get back to talking. It's a podcast.
The re-rapping. Welcome back. Anyway, we have a guest today, as we talked about earlier. First of all, would like to just make sure again that we kind of plug the names of the books that are available and also the one that's available for pre-order. Share the jam with everybody.
Oh boy, let me start this spiel. First of all, I don't want to start rumors, but there is echoes in the grapevine that you mentioned that Pilot X earlier. I may have heard that there's a sequel on the way. Maybe I might have heard echoes of that. So that's a thing. Books that are available. My debut novel, the science fiction space opera, The Life Engineered, is available for 99¢ on Inkshares in digital format. It's a story about robots in the future where there's no humans. And I really have a difficult time explaining the story of that book because it's basically the roots of a potential civil war amongst a robot civilization that's narrowly avoided by the main character, Dajir, who manages to sort of stitch back the civilization together.
I really
wish I had a good synopsis for this.
Do you want to I don't know if you want to go that deep into it or for yeah. me, it was the philosophical idea. It was, I mean, if anybody knows stuff about the idea of collective unconsciousness and going back in to live again, experience another life and grow and ascend, to me, the K-Pax, which the robots, you know, you refer to that are, it's like they're the evolution of humanity. We created them. We got AI down and they're actually evolving. It is a very significant part of the world building in that universe to me that I was really intrigued and excited by.
Well, that's the thing about the book. Like I had a lot of fun writing and exploring all these really cool concepts, and I never sat down to really figure out a good synopsis for it, like a good hook without sort of spoiling all the cool stuff.
It's kind of hard sometimes. I mean, it's like, how would you, you know, I'll give some examples. I give a whole bunch of examples, but there's a lot of books that are like that. And I actually, sometimes it just can't be boiled down to that short, but like, I think of almost everything like Ember. I'm a huge fan of Philip K. Dick, and they're about 90% of his work. You can't there. I could not give you a synopsis. Like, oh, well, but then you have to talk about this and you have to talk about that. But that's good. It should be complex and there should be a fleshed out world. And actually, that's one of the things I really enjoyed about it. And that was what year was that published?
That was initially published. The current edition was published in 2016 on March 1st.
That makes sense. That's what I thought, because I think it was over a year ago when I read it. I really enjoyed it. So after The Life Engineered,
So after Life Engineered, I published, because I work in marketing, so I really understand how branding works and how you should definitely have a specific brand. Like if you're going to write science fiction, you should stick to that so that you can build on that. So since I have this very, very good understanding of how that works as a marketing director, I wrote a horror book because I'm bad at my job. So I wrote a book called A God in the Shed, which is a lot easier to explain. It's about a small town in Quebec that has been harboring this ancient entity, very Lovecraftian old god, that's been kept sort of prisoner by an insane serial killer that has yet to be caught. But by being caught, and one of my friends coined the phrase, it's a well-meaning serial killer. But when he's caught, it allows this evil entity to break free and then get recaptured by one of the local villagers, who then sort of starts going down the rabbit hole and peeling back all the onion skin layers of her tiny village, which she thought was all wholesome and good, and discovering that there's just generations after generation of cults and plots behind it, all going, orbiting around this entity that she's now has control over. Well, not control, but she has custody over. And that should have been mentioned in the book, that it's the first part of a trilogy. Mm-hmm. I have some readers that are happy about that and some are upset. But it's
everybody happy.
it's really like when you have a first part of a series, it really should be in the first book. And it never occurred to me, like in the hurricane of, because this book got financed and it got published in such an unexpected and rapid succession after Life Engineered, that the ideas, like all the planning that went around it being a series, kind of slipped my mind. Unfortunately, it's selling well enough that we're probably going to do a second printing, so we'll be able to remove the odd typo here and there and give it a serious subtitle and really polish off these little details, this little faux pas. So those are my two books that are out right now.
Did you want notes on that? You had a long pause.
Oh no! Well, I'm trying to give you're the host, and I don't want I have a tendency to talk a lot. And
that's
I don't
why we
want.
Have you on.
I mean, you mentioned Mind of a Geek earlier, and because I have fun overpowering Nate, the host, and just taking over his podcast, I can go on and on. So I'm trying to give breathing rooms that you guys can talk to since it's your show.
Because I went on Mind of a Geek, and boy can talk, and I'm a talker. And so it was interesting because Ember actually messaged me, and she was, I can't remember if we were talking about it afterwards. I was like, yeah, I thought I did pretty okay. And she was like, hey, you were really quiet. And I was like, yeah, I didn't want to talk over him. But yeah, he's a man, that guy can talk. I was like, holy crap, this might be the only person that I have met that's on point with the level of not shutting up that I have. I also have to mention your webcomic.
Oh, no, you don't.
Oh yeah. I enjoy it. I enjoyed it.
I've got terrible news for you.
I know.
I'm probably never picking that back up, unfortunately. Like, I do, I'd love to finish the story on it because I was going somewhere, but I don't have it in me to do the one page a week that I was doing. And you can see in the art, the quality was just slipping week after week in the end. It's so demanding.
It's just interesting though, to apply it I've heard you say it before. I'm almost positive that you kind of consider yourself more of a storyteller above all else, just really focusing on telling a story. And how hard is it to have to, I guess when you have that, where you're like, okay, I have the story I want to tell and I want to finish it, but I also have 18 other irons in, 18 other fires. How do you manage it? Do you have a lot of different ideas in your head kind of all at the same time?
Yes, absolutely. That's one of the weird things, is something I tell other fellow writers that tend to put a lot of value on the ideas, is that ideas are actually very easy. Ideas are a dime a dozen. It's execution that
it's
really
follow
counts.
Through. It's the follow through that'll get you.
No, absolutely. And it's funny because, like, there's so many, like, I participate every year in the National Novel Writing Month. And
NaNoWriMo.
It's awesome. It's what got me started into writing novels because I wanted to challenge myself and see if I could write long form storytelling. And when I discovered, oh, no, wait, this is the only thing I want to do, because any, like, when I'm trying to tell a story through a comic and have to deal with the illustration, the inking, the coloring, the lettering, and all of that, it slows me down so much that I just want to tell the story. I want the interaction with the reader. I want the feedback. I want the reaction. And I want to get to the end. And since I like to tell very long stories with a lot of characters and a lot of character development, comics, while I love to draw, just they're not right for me because I get impatient because I want to finish the story and then tell the next one. So right now, I mean, I'm currently juggling 4 novels, so to speak, at different stages of development. And I want to not, like, I don't want to get rid of them, but I'm eager to, especially those that are written, I'm on, like, the editing and polishing stage, I want to get that over with so I can do the next thing.
I think it's, I honestly, as a reader, I appreciate that. There's nothing worse than when you have somebody who's like, they hoard it and they hold on to it until it's like, it has to be this like pristine, absolutely perfect thing. And it's like you were saying earlier, it's, you know, is it better to be perfect or done? And as a reader, I would take something that is, you're never going to get to pure perfection. You know, you're just never going to. So give it to me so I can enjoy it.
sorry. It's not just that. It's also like my perfect as a writer and your perfect as a reader can be completely different things. So, I mean, I can polish that stone as much as I want until I feel like it's a gleaming diamond. But when I give it to you, it might just not be as good because I spend too much time on it. Like overthinking is a thing.
So I've got kind of another side of that. I was published back in 2010. I did it was supposed to be the beginning of a series, but I actually ended up taking it down after my contract was up because I stopped liking it. I've still got it and I'm still working on it. 8 years later, I haven't gotten it done yet to where I want to get it republished. I don't even know if I can. I probably can, but it's. I really do want to get it out and get it, you know, out there again. But I literally, like, in the 2 years that it was up, I had people buy it, but I started cringing every time someone was like, I read your book. And I'm like, dude, really? Because
You didn't have to. No.
Yeah.
No, well, that's how I feel about the books I have right now. Like, even though they're not that old, they're recent, the problem is, like, I had to sort of learn to accept that my first book is always going to be my worst book, and my second book is going to be my second worst book, and so on and so forth, because writing is always going to be a skill, and the more I write, the better I'm going to write, which means that the more I iterate, the worse my earlier works are going to be. So at some point, I had to just bite the bullet and say, okay, well, Life Engineered is what it is, and any sequel that comes after, any books I'm going to write after that is going to be better, and as time goes on, I'm going to cringe more and more at the dialogue and the story structure and things like that, which is one of the reasons why it's hard for me to go back to the Life Engineered and write a synopsis for it, because just thinking about how the story is done, it's like I always feel that I could have done something less complex, like a leaner storyline, and then I need to stop myself from going down that spiral because that's how I'll end up wanting to like take it back, which I can't. So I completely understand where you are and your process, like to go back and do something until you're satisfied with it is fine, but at some point you're like, even if you do get to a point where you're satisfied like in a year or 2 years and you release it again, 3 years after that, you're going to be pissed at it again because you're just going to improve.
Yeah. Well, it's just, I was very, I wanted to publish it as soon as I could. I hadn't even like graduated, I just graduated college or something like that. And I realized that there was parts of it that I had written back as a sophomore in high school that I hadn't changed. And I was like, why didn't my editor point that out? But it wasn't my editor's job to do that. It was my editor's job to proofread, not to go for storyline.
Well, it depends. Like, you've got three stages of editing, and I don't know if you had a developmental edit on your book, but that's the part that is supposed to fix the story. And if you did and they thought it was okay, then it was probably either it was okay or it was a bad editor.
I don't know.
As a reader, I want to say
possible either way.
My experience with knowing people who write and will put out a different edition of something is your instincts to perfect often end up sanitizing the things that were caught a reader up to begin with. So your point of view, I think, is different, and that should be kept in mind. I mean, you can always improve on, and I think a sequel is a better idea than reiterating. I know that, goodness, I used to write a lot of short stories, and I'm not published. I don't remember. I might have some poetry published somewhere, but
I was like, I've got stuff published in, like, college journals. Does that count?
Yeah, like, stuff. And I used to write papers for other people, but I lost touch with a lot of people, and I quit writing for a really long time. I had kids. I was busy. Writing wasn't happening. Paper gets, you know, whatever. It's wipes. So I got in touch with all these people that I knew in high school and college a couple years back, and their first question to me upon reconnecting was, what are you writing? What are you writing? What have you been writing? And I didn't even realize I had, like, touched these people that had read my stuff in any way. That's how they perceived me as a writer, and they wanted to know what I was creating. And that's helped me be inspired to, you know, well, to think about getting back into it, but I haven't so much. So I really appreciate all the work that you put into it, Jeff. And I have to say, I have other friends who have published works, and I am a careful reader, and you have really great editors. Like, I found one wrong word. I found one thing in each book so far. And in the Hall of Life Engineers, like, you used sewn instead of sewn. And I was
It could be. I have, like, a document where I catalog the typos that get reported to me, typos and errors, so that if ever we do further printing, I can correct them.
And there's, like, sewn instead of sewn, then the next one there's worst instead of worse. And swear to God, this is, like, one typo that's actually a, what's the word for it? It's a word that wouldn't get caught by spell correction. It is a word, sounds the same.
Homonym?
Homophone.
Yeah, they were like homophones, homonyms.
Homonym.
Like, that's really stellar.
Homonom.
Wheel of Time has way more editing issues than that, and they just keep cranking them out, and he died and didn't finish, so keep on trucking.
It's so funny that you say that, because I'm the same way. I'm the perpetual, like, proofreader. I can't read anything without finding a typo. God, it drives me nuts, honestly. It's like nothing worse than when I was in college, like, here, pay $180 for my textbook that I barely fucking read before I published it.
But when the book's good enough, you can just keep going and forget it. Hell yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. But I'm the nerd that used to, I found out when I was a small child that you could write, that the reason you were given an address for the editor inside the book was so that you could write them and report to them when you found things. So I did that for years. Every time I read a book, I would have my little list, and I would put it in the mail because my grandmother encouraged me to do that. But I'm the same way, and I am always happy when I don't, like, have the glaring errors. And there's a lot of them. It's amazing to me how many books get put out where it's annoying and it distracts you. So it is nice when the editing is solid. I agree.
Yeah, I gotta give credit to the copy editor for doing a really good job on catching those mistakes. That's The first part is dev edits, and you have line edit. The last person who does the proofreading is the copy editor, and she's the one who, I think her name is Katrina, did a really good job. But even, I mean, it doesn't matter how good you are. Eventually, after reading the same book, catching errors like 3 or 4 times, you start to lose the forest for the trees or vice versa. So
I'm really curious about the dev edit process. Like, it sounds like that's kind of where you hit with your publisher, like, that I don't like this happening in the story. How do you resolve something like that part of the story isn't working? That's got to feel really, I'd be so self-conscious.
I'm very fortunate. Like the first book for Life Engineered, I worked with a guy called Cleese Smith, who he's a freelancer who works with Girl Friday Production, who does professional editing services. And he read the book. He loved it. More important than anything, he got it. Like, he immediately understood what I was trying to do. And an editor's job, especially a developmental editor, his job is to make the story better. And especially to come in from a reader's perspective. Because that's one of the problems that we as writer, like, I talk to a lot of other writer friends, and they, like, talk to me about, like, getting in fights with their editors. Like, because sometimes the editor will want to sort of inject some of his ideas. Where I'm really fortunate is I come from a design background. I've had to argue with clients, and I've had to learn how to have creative dialogue and be able to have conversations about ideas. So where a lot of writers, when they get a note from an editor saying, this plot point doesn't work, you should change it to this, their reaction is, no, this is my story. I want to keep my precious as it is. My reaction, because of how I was trained through 2 decades of graphic design and marketing, is to go, all right, why? Why does it not work? Why do you suggest this particular fix that I don't like? So this is, instead of just being this confrontation of yes, no, yes, no, it opens up the dialogue between me and the editor, and he'll often, if there's something I don't like, that they propose a change, they explain why. If I agree with the explanation, then, but I don't agree with the proposed solution, I can come up with my own solution that addresses the problem. Or if I really don't agree with the explanation, I can counter and say, well, be that as it may, Mr. Editor, I disagree because of this. And
yeah, you can provide a justification as another option if it's something that you really can't find a solution for. I think some of it's common ground too, right? I mean, I think when I've done most of the writing that I've done in any professional capacity has been sales writing for companies, and they just think that they know exactly how it needs to be written. It's like, okay, why'd you hire me then? If you knew how to write this, you didn't. Oh, yeah, that's why I'm here.
I've had this situation with one of my bosses. I worked for a headwork company for about 7 years. And after just a couple of months, I had to go to his office and say, look, if you hired me to be a graphic designer, it would be super nice if you let me do my job and not tell me what you want me to design. Because exactly. You're paying me way too much to not benefit from my experience as a designer and a marketing person.
No, absolutely. No,
yes, I do have a baby, plush baby griffin behind me. Someone in chat asked about that.
Yes, and it was funny because mine's in the other room. I thought it was next to
me. It was actually me.
I have a lot of toys behind me.
It's okay. We have toys everywhere here. We're a toy friendly podcast.
Yep. My Jazz is too far away. I can't reach him.
One of the things that I'm curious about, just because, you know, it's funny that you mentioned NaNoWriMo, because that was one of the things that I was like, okay, I need to be forced to write and just put it on a page and just get past that step of, you know, just doing it. Do you have a process or an amount that you write? Do you write every day, and do you commit to that? And do you have some kind of a process in that way?
I don't necessarily write every day, but I will do a certain amount of writing related work. Because when I'm in the process of editing, I have difficulty editing a piece of work while writing another piece of work. I kind of need to segment that. Mostly because if I'm in the mindset of one story, I want to be able to concentrate. Like, I do a lot of the brain work while I'm walking or driving or taking a shower or cooking. Or like when I'm doing any activity where my brain can wander, I like to let it wander onto whatever project I'm on. So if I'm on two or three projects at the same time, it gets really hard because I'm not that smart. So, but every day I try to do a little bit of something. Like currently, between the time that I submitted the manuscript for the sequel to God in the Shed and the time that I got feedback back from the editor, I edited another project that I'm working on. And almost to the day when I finished it and sent it out to beta readers, I got a phone call from the editor and he gave me some notes. And now my work is to write an outline of how I'm going to handle the modifications that we're supposed to do to make sure that we're on schedule for the release. Once that's done, I need to go back and while I'm waiting for further feedback, I'm going to bounce back and forth between that and sort of cleaning up another novel. Maybe I'm even going to have some notes from my betas, depending on where that is. I'm going to tackle it. But I'm fortunate that I don't have a lot going on in my life, generally speaking. And I really love writing and editing. So I have a lot of friends that they get home after a hard day's work and they're looking forward to just sitting down and watching TV or playing video games. I get home from work and I look forward to sitting down and jumping into one of my works, one of my novels, and either writing or editing or doing things like that. So we're
that's your passion. That's good. That means it's your passion. That means that you're doing what you should be doing.
Which makes it super easy.
Do you have the board with like your plot points? Are you like this board?
Actually, it's funny because I was having this. I was on a panel at StokerCon in Providence a couple of weeks ago. And I was a panelist for pantsers versus plotters, if you will. And one of the things I was explaining is how I tend to plot my books, not a ton, but enough that I can just sit down and write without having to interrupt for research or stop midway through a chapter to figure out how things fit together. Sorry, I keep hitting my microphone like I'm new at this. So far, most of my plotting has been very much just on paper and not necessarily chronological, but sort of like if you want to go into like I'll give you like a brief explanation of my plotting pattern, if you will, is I will usually take like a bunch of walks and just think about stories and think about who my characters are, what my major plot arcs are, what my characters' arcs are, and figure out some ideas for like set pieces and scenes that I really want, like things that I think are going to be fun to write and visually, you know, cool for readers to read. And then I'll write all of these down and sort of lay them together and stitch them together with whatever events need to, you know, make it into a proper narrative. And usually I do this on the computer or I do it like I use a mind mapping software that allows you to just write a bunch of things and connect them. But there's this one book that I want to write that really leans heavily on conspiracy theories. And I think I'm going to get a cork board and a bunch of colored yarns and some index cards and pins and just really embrace the crazy.
I was going to say, so you can look like you're a crazy person studying a conspiracy theory.
Yes.
I'm into it. I'm into it. That's method writing. That's great. Do it.
It's one of the things I really enjoy is really getting into like the mindset. Like when I write horror, I listen to a lot of creepy music and I'll read more horror and I'll just get into like I'll change my phone's, you know, wallpaper to something creepy. If I'm doing sci-fi stuff, I'll just download a bunch of, you know, EDM and electronic music. And like, I like to get into the mindset of what I'm working on. And usually I don't have too much trouble jumping from one mindset to another, but it's just fun to play around with the thematic of the book.
Hey, Jeff, I'm going to take this opportunity to ask if you have listened to the Tannis podcast.
I have not. I'm super behind on a ton of podcasts.
Give that a listen. I think you will like it very much.
I'll give it a look.
The writing is interesting, and it's up your horror alley.
Oh, cool.
All right, put that in. Somebody put that in. Type that up right now.
Because I've been listening, because I don't have much time to read, because every minute that I can read is a minute I can write, so I tend to lean towards writing. I've started doing a lot of audiobooks, because I can do that in the car where I'm doing things that prevent me from writing. But that has cut into my podcast listening time a lot. But I've discovered some really good books.
So I know that, I know we're, man, we have, so, I want to just keep talking and asking more and more questions, but we're winding down on time here. So I have to, I just want to make sure that you give your shout out for the pre-order right now. I'm pretty excited about it. I know Ember is too. But yes, so shout out what people need to do. Tell the people what to do.
Nothing. They can't do anything.
Lies. You're lies.
Come on.
The pre-orders are closed.
Did they close? No way.
So here's the thing. For Arch Android, which is a series.
What? I was already in it, though.
The sequel to The Life Engineered, which was called Arch Android, was on funding on Inkshares. And I was supposed to put a lot of effort and promote that and get people excited and pre-order. And I did none of that because I was busy working on the sequel for God in the Shed. And quite unfortunately, God in the Shed is selling more. It's optioned for television. It's like there's more pressure to get it done. So I couldn't campaign adequately for Arch Android. So I couldn't get it funded. However, and I don't want to make promises, I'm definitely going to get that book out, whether it's self-published or something else. But my publisher did send me a message today saying, do you still want to publish this? So we're talking about publishing it regardless of whether it's funded or not. It would probably be a different sort of type of publishing, but that would be kind of invisible to the reader. And I've already got Tom Merritt sort of agreed to keep the sequel to Life Engineered under the Sword and Laser collection umbrella. So that would remain the same. Yeah. And I'm looking at the same cover artist that did Life Engineered. So if all goes well, it's either going to be something I self-publish or something that I publish through my publisher Inkshares, or just it's still kind of up in the air. But as far as pre-ordering, unfortunately, the campaign, I extended the campaign twice, and every time promising myself I would put the energy into it, scheduling time to put the energy into it, but every single time something fell on my lap, some more work, something had to be done.
I love A God in the Shed. Honestly, it's awesome. It's great. And I read it maybe just because I met it more recently, or maybe because I grew up in a small town and I have lots of weird thoughts about that. But I'm a small town. I grew up in just a small place. So that really intrigued me. So that's really exciting to hear that there's a lot more going on with that. And I can't wait. So I'm going to remind our fabulous listeners that if you would like to chime in, you can do so. You can email us at geekgrills@gmail.com. You can give us a ring at 508-474-5577. And if you want to chime in live, Ember, tell the folks what they can do.
And please remember, you can always watch us record live at twitch.tv/9of12. That's NINEOF12 on Tuesday evenings at 7:30 p.m. Eastern Time.
So, grills and honorary grill friends, what are you most anticipating now? Linda, what's on deck for you?
The ATE LARP, which is short for After the End. It is a post-apoc Western sci-fi LARP, so think Firefly without the spaceships. We are moving from... we usually play this at Harrison Bay, which is in Tennessee. We're moving to North Tennessee, almost to the Kentucky border. Our permanent site is going to be Possum Trot, which is an actual replica Western town.
I still can't get over Possum Trot.
It's so cool. I'm so excited. It's got a saloon with two stories and like stages. And it's going to be great. I'm so excited. you can see my big Nerf gun right behind me. That's one of the ones I'm taking with me. And it's just all of my ATE stuff is right there. I'm like, let's go, let's go. It's a 4-hour drive, but I don't care.
That is going to be lots and lots of fun, and I can't wait to hear about it and all of the mayhem and awesomeness that ensues. Mm-hmm. So, Jeff, what is in your immediate geeky future?
Well, right now I'm preparing to go to Adepticon next Tuesday night.
Oh, that's right.
pretty much in exactly 7 days, almost to the hour, I'm driving out to pick up my brother at his home, and then we do the 15-hour drive to Schaumburg, Illinois, where we will drink and play with toy soldiers in equal proportions. It's going to be awesome.
Is it really going to be equal proportions? You're going to be in Illinois. They actually know how to drink there.
It will be. There's so many drinking buddies there.
Yeah. Oh yeah. Oh my goodness. Well, that's going to be fun. That's awesome. It's so funny. I haven't thought about that event in so long. That's just a blast from the past, I guess, for me.
It's grown so much too in the last decade. It's I think there're 3,500 guests now. Like they're starting to reach a point where they're going to have difficulty keeping that at a scale that's manageable.
Oh my gosh. Well, that's going to be awesome. You're probably going to have, well, I know, you'll definitely have a blast. Amber, are you anticipating in your geeky week?
Well, in my notes I had that I was really looking forward to pre-ordering Archdruid and Payday on Thursday, but misread that I could do that till September.
When did that change happen? That was recent, though, wasn't it? How recent did you pull the pre-order?
The website might just be... That might have been last September, and I'm an idiot. So, but I'm really looking forward, and I will do whatever I can if you need any help to get that published, because I am looking forward to the sequel to that very, very much. I haven't finished the other one, but I think I like that one better. hopefully, I'm going to get to hear the master of the Peculiars album anytime now. It should have been being worked on by the engineers this week. That's my husband's band, so super excited about that.
So, much in that you were saying 7 days from now, 14 days from now, I will be beginning the journey to go to Belize. And I have this weird, like, I can't believe this is happening thing. I got my passport in the mail. Now I feel like super official, like I'm allowed to leave the country. So I'm going to do that. That's crazy. That's pretty much it right now. It's like, I got to get that shit together. Like I need to pack. Like I need to know what the hell I'm doing. No, I'm really, really excited, but I'll be honest. It's like the first time I've ever been nervous to travel anywhere. Like I go all over the place, like on a whim, but this is my first time like leaving the continental United States. So I'm actually like, okay, I need to make sure I have my currency exchange, like my money figured out. And I got to make sure I know what the hell I'm doing and that I don't lose my passport in the process somehow. Like I'm terrified. I don't know. It's going to be awesome. I'm really excited. And I just can't believe it's like only a short couple weeks away. So that's me pretty much wholly focused on that. So I just want to remind everybody that the Geek Girls podcast is completely and wholly supported by our patrons. You guys are the coolest people on the internet, and at least some of my favorite people on the internet. Probably all of my favorite people on the internet, actually. So if you are not a patron already, you can become one at patreon.com/grills. I just want to say thank you again to all of you. You guys are all fantastic. I want more people to become patrons so that I can give away more game codes. I have lots of game codes. I have lots of stupid shit to give away. Please give me a reason to give it away. Please support us so I can throw shit at you. I think that was for all, like, what? I think it's, like, all the $10 up or $5 up. I don't know. Something like that. Whatever. I'm announcing it now. $5 and up a month, I throw shit at you.
I do want to add, we have some listed up there, but Jen and I both have more shit we want to give away. And, of course, if you have $10 and up, we have swag. We're, like, making people stuff. The other thing I want to add is now that we are live streaming. Any proceeds that come from the Amazon link in our Twitch or bits that are thrown at us, when that eventually generates money, that will also all be reinvested into Geek Grills. So it's all about you folks.
I thought it was all about me. I mean us. Is it about them?
It's about them.
No.
Listen, the hell, we can talk people to ourselves all day long. Why are we on the internet?
I literally do, though. Linda, why don't you let them know what they can do that doesn't involve spending any money, even though they should spend money.
I mean, you if you become a $10 and up patron, I'll make you a plushie. So there's that. But if you cannot spare the change at the moment, you can leave us an iTunes review. They are free, and they help people find us on, or even like Stitcher and any place where you can get our podcast. Leave us a review because it'll help with our ratings.
Anywhere where you're listening, review is fantastic. We appreciate those.
It'll help people find us, improves our rating, all that good stuff. You can also join us on our Facebook page and follow us on Twitter and then help us spread the word there.
I did get a message today that somebody subscribed on Patreon to follow our stuff, so thank you, whoever that is.
Thank you!
I will say that our Patreon has been... We didn't have any new patrons this week, but I'm seeing it grow, and it's very exciting to see that happen. And getting more people coming here and hanging out live is super awesome. And speaking of finding us on the internet, you folks, where can the fine folks find you? Jeff, let's start with you. Where can all the fine folks find stuff about you?
So right now I'm cleaning up my website so it no longer has any references to that old comic, and it basically is easier to navigate. And Dawn, also has
we didn't get
easier...
to that story. We'll do it after the podcast.
Oh, what, you were talking about that little correction I need to make?
We'll do that after it ends, so people who like are on the live stream will see.
It's fine. So if you go to jfdubow.com, that's my website. It already has information on my books and all those links. It's just kind of a mess right now, and I'm in the process of cleaning that up. In the next few weeks, it should be all pristine and nice. But you can get all the information to get my books right there. And any news about publications can also be found on Twitter at jfdubow. That's J-F-D-U-B-E-A-U.
And we will obviously make sure that all that's in the show notes for everybody, too. And Linda, where can folks find you?
You can also listen to me talk about women in gaming on the Glitter Dice podcast. And we've still got our Monster Hearts, I believe. We've just released episode 2 of Monster Hearts of Glitter Dice Plays. And you can find me on Twitch under the name True Noob, TRUN00B. I do live streaming to make the plushies. I'm doing Pokemon plushies. I won't show you the one I'm making right now because it's just a body and a head. And
no more decapitated Pokemon. Thank
no
you.
Traumatizing us that. Again.
The Charizard. Was it the Charizard arm?
His little hand.
Charmeleon.
Just a hand. A severed arm of a Pokemon? Thank you. I appreciate that. Ember, where can folks find you?
I can be reached at 9012 on Twitter and Twitch, and you can hear me on the Part-Time Gamers podcast as well.
I'm the Jen. You can find me at The Jen Says on Twitter, where I say things, and you can find everything else that I touch or am part of in everything that I touch at thejensays.com, which I own now. Oh, wait, I already owned it. I just didn't know it. Anyway, thanks for listening, everybody. Good game.
Good game. Bye.
Good game.
Well played.
If you enjoyed the show and have the quill skill to shriek speech, leave us a 5-star unique critique on iTunes or thrill us with the size of your handbill by spilling goodwill into our tills at patreon.com/grills. We can also be found windmilling around Facebook and YouTube at facebook.com/geekgrills and youtube.com/geekgrills, where we like to chill. Tweet your siren songs where the throngs belong on Twitter at geekgrills, where we're dressed to kill. For more info on the show, though, go to geekgrills.com, where you can find previous episodes, show notes, and current contest information. Send us your psalms and qualms to geekgrills@gmail.com or give us a ring at 508-474-5577, where we can hear your lovely voice sing the zing thing. Thanks for listening.